You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA. You know ID in the D in the town all day. ID in the D in the SEA.
Hello and welcome to episode 469 of the Fabulous Peltoncast, sponsored by our friends at Pagliacci Pizza. I'm your co-host, Kevin Pelton.
And I'm Tristan Caracino.
And we're coming to you in separate locations this week. I'm in Seattle, Washington, home of the four-time WNBA champion, Storm.
And I'm coming to you from Renton, Washington, home of the Super Bowl 48 champion, Seattle Seahawks.
There was something off about that.
I got tickets to training camp this week. I'm in on Seahawks football again.
As you know, we are firmly in the stage where I'm like, I do not want to think about the Seahawks. The Seahawks make me think of rain and cold, and I don't want to think about that. I want to enjoy what has been a very beautiful month of June thus far.
I don't know what happened. Somehow this week, getting that email, I was like, you know what? Okay. I haven't been to training camp in forever. Last week, I said that I can't remember what the term that I used was. But the gauche might have been it. the most gauche thing that a person could do, which is not quite right, I don't think that was the word, was publicly be a Seahawks fan. I was in a mood.
As opposed to the other times, you think you are rarely in a mood? You did say you were on one prior to this podcast, right?
I think I'm gonna stick with gauche.
I think gauche is reasonable.
That you could do is publicly be a Seahawks fan. It's like, oh god. But then this week, 1 week passed, and I'm back in, going to training camp. I'm at it. I don't have to say what episode it is. We all know. There was George Kirby. I feel like we missed on one of these numbers.
We did.
George Kirby has
it would be the last one, yes.
Yeah, a hilarious number for a good player to have.
We did this question previously. Is George Kirby the best 68 in MLB history already?
There's no way.
You think there has to be?
We did this question about Bernie Williams. We did this question about number 51, which both Randy Johnson and another player wore on the Mariners.
Yeah, but I'm saying
so much that they retired the jersey two times.
All right, George Kirby is not that high in the all-time number 68 WAR rankings.
He hasn't
really
played for that long.
Okay, but again, the top five players on this list wore 68 for one season, presumably when they were breaking into the major leagues. Among people who have actually worn these. The number for more than two seasons, he ranks fourth already and is within a half WAR of being second. He's trying to chase, if we count again the real number 68s, he's trying to chase down Dellin Betances, the longtime reliever who has had 11.1 career WAR.
He's going to crush Betances.
The all-time leader, regardless of how long he wore it, was Josh Reddick at 24.9. He predictably only wore it during his rookie season when he recorded minus 0.3 WAR.
I just love I feel like George Kirby getting to that number is just to like, maybe he had like a good season and just like, all right, sure. Fuck it. I'm 68.
We need a good how players chose their number.
I feel like it was like assigned or something and he just was doing well. And I get the feeling that George Kirby's kind of like, I'm just not going to think about this now.
According to the AI that comes up with the Google search results, this is simply his jersey number, and there doesn't appear to be any particular significance.
Thanks, AI.
But there is no information out there about why George Kirby wears number 68. So if someone, you know, the listener wants to hit up someone in Seattle sports media, I suppose I in this context, could hit up someone in Seattle sports media.
I don't, this is not, look,
there's not even a story.
Hit anybody up. But it's just like if you're using it, hitting somebody up, it should not be on why George Kirby is number 68.
I mean, I'm not saying I'm like burning a huge favor on this one. I'm just saying I could mention it at some point in the media room at a Storm game.
Just do me a favor and don't.
Okay, wow.
Don't mention this podcast. I didn't say it to Saul. Look, you do not need to. You'll hear more about that later. But just don't mention it.
You'd rather not know. Why George Kirby wears 68.
Keep the mystery up. We're all wondering.
All right, well, what we're not wondering, I guess we are wondering, perhaps, is who the NCAA record holder, because for a long time, it was UW's Amanda Mall, and she no longer holds the record, and that's because it was surpassed at the NCAA track and field championships in Eugene, Oregon this past weekend by her twin sister, Hannah Mole.
Hello.
Amanda finished third. She tied for second in terms of height cleared, but had more attempts to get there, so therefore finished in third. But Hannah won the championship, and after securing that, went ahead and surpassed her twin sister's all-time NCAA record. So, family
This is like
and
one brother having the name on the podcast and the other brother being the MVP of that podcast, is how I would describe this.
But we're also a middle distance school. Congrats to UW's Nathan Green and Sophie O'Sullivan, who won the men's and women's 1500 titles last weekend. Green won for the second time in 3 years in an event the Husky men have dominated with four consecutive wins. Joe Waxham, I believe, had the other ones. And then Sophie O'Sullivan earned the first national running title by a UW woman since 2012, and the UW women finished fourth in the overall standings at the track and field championships, again in Eugene.
Hello, into your house, and beat you in every possible way. This is like Kalen DeBoer's first time down there. This is like Mike Penix and Kalen DeBoer just crushing them in their own house. Setting world records is what we do.
And yeah, we're a faster school, but we're also a higher jumping school,
Hello.
many people are saying. Right, lastly this week, we're remembering legendary Seattle U alum Johnny O'Brien, who died Friday at age 94. Along with his twin brother, Eddie, Johnny helped lead the Redhawks to their first NCAA tournament appearance in 1953 and a win over the Harlem Globetrotters the year before.
I
Plain
don't think they were
said.
supposed to win that game.
I mean, no, the Globetrotters used to play serious games. When they play the Washington Generals, they're not supposed to win, but
Fair enough.
or they're not supposed to lose. But playing center at 5'9", O'Brien was an All-American first team pick in 1953 after becoming the first NCAA player to score 1,000 points in a season the year before. He finished as Seattle U's all-time leading scorer after a 6-year career in Major League Baseball, where he played alongside Eddie for a period of time in Pittsburgh. O'Brien also played for the Seattle Rainiers for a season before becoming a King County Council member and working for the Kingdom in security sales and promotion. So although Johnny O'Brien not from Seattle, the O'Brien twins were from New Jersey, which is where he lived his final years and passed away. Another strong candidate for Seattle's most Seattle person.
That's kind of incredible.
If you played for the Rainiers and then worked at the Kingdom, consider yourself a contender.
And beat the Harlem Globetrotters.
All right. With that, we are directly into your favorite segment.
Don't burn yourself. We got Mariners hot takes coming at you.
Well, today was the last day of school for the kids. And you know what that means. The boys of summer are coming. And you know who I'm talking about. Your Seattle Mariners. This hot take is doubling as a bold prediction because I am right here, right now, on the last day of school, boldly predicting that the Mariners will be at least 5 games up in the AL West by the time school starts back up on August 27th. Jerry DePoto, I can see you. You're all of Italian skin shining in the sun. You've got your hair combed back and six aces on your staff. Because if we're counting right now, that number is at six. And they are rolling in order of aceness. We've got Woo, Gilbert, Castillo, Hancock, Kirby, and waiting in the wings, of course, Logan Evans. Sorry, Bryce Miller. Out on the road today, I saw a WRC plus sticker on a Cadillac. A little voice in my head said, "Don't look back. You can never look back because this recent swoon hasn't meant anything." They've got statistically one of the best lineups in baseball and an absolutely on fire J.P. Crawford looking at possibly an all-star appearance. Cal back in form with the second best odds for AL MVP. Cole Young starting to figure it out. And I thought those days were gone forever, but what did I know? Because Jorge Polanco is again one of the best in baseball. These boys of summer are exactly where they should be and just about to have one of their best summers in franchise history. And I'm here to boldly predict that the Mariners' playoff odds will still be strong after the boys of summer are gone.
There you go. It's a good thing that we did these hot takes after a Mariners, a dominant Mariners victory, as opposed to after they got shut out by the Red Sox in the season opener on Monday night.
I'm sorry, but I left that game no less confident about the Mariners.
No less confident.
No less confident. It's one game because the one thing that mattered in that game was not the offense. It was Logan Gilbert's performance. True. Coming back from injury. 10 strikeouts in 5 innings in his first game in months. That's what matters. There's one anomaly, but like, I was so excited about that. In a 2-0 loss, I left that game being like, you know what? The Mariners are in an amazing position because Logan Gilbert is doing Logan Gilbert things. The eruption of offense, Cal returning the next day, it was kind of just like, their offense was playing better than the runs that they were scoring for quite a few days in a row. But you look at this rotation where they're at now, they were one Logan Gilbert away from being one of the best teams in baseball.
Cal Raleigh on Tuesday night, a triple away from the cycle.
Hello.
Also had a stolen base, right?
I saw none.
I didn't see it either. I was watching the storm to the extent I was watching any Seattle sports. But this from friend of the pod, Tim Booth, the 31st player in baseball history with a single, a double, a homer, a steal, and 6 RBI in a game.
Wow. Alex Meyer just had nothing to say about this.
Alex has not yet posted the game-winning stat that I've seen. I'm sure he's cooking up something terrific. I would never, never, ever question Alex Meyer.
But yesterday's game, or 2 days ago, whenever you're listening to this, right, the Logan Gilbert loss, that was the anomaly. Because looking at the top of the order with how well JP has been playing lately, to see, I know he got on base a couple of times, but I think they were a collective 0-10, the top three in the lineup. It's like, shit, that's going to happen sometimes. But it wasn't anything that made me concerned at all. And seeing 2 hits tonight from Cole Young, I'm like, things are starting to happen with this Mariners team right now. It's funny that they kind of like, they were probably doing a little bit better than they should have for a while. And now when they play well, I will believe it's more repeatable. I'll believe it's a little bit more real because the underlying offensive stats are great and the pitching staff is great. And the Emerson Hancock performance, I mean, they're coming off, like, you almost cannot be negative about it, right? Like, a 3-game sweep against the Guardians is not an easy thing to do. And it was a fairly dominant sweep. Obviously, it took the comeback in one of those games. But, like, you know, Sunday wasn't close, right? Yeah, it's 6-0. And then a 2-0 loss, which, whatever, you throw it out. And then an 8-0 win. Like, these are games that the run differential is moving to the right direction from. You know, the Fangraphs playoff odds are going to, like, those types of performances against all of the teams that are right around them trying to get into the playoffs, whether it's the wild card or whatever. And I don't know. I'm just like, I feel like the Mariners, like it was a hot take, a bold prediction as well, but I believe all of it. Like, this team is finally right now rounding into shape. This is the best Mariners team that we've seen since 2001, period. Not even close.
Wonder Virgil is +4. I did not realize the Texas Rangers were at +22, who have now are only a game and a half of the in the rearview mirror of the Mariners for second in the AL West. I mean, it does help their playoff odds that the Red Sox, who are right around them in the standings, did trade their best hitter over the weekend for prospects, which was a choice. Fangraphs playoff odds still around 55%, a little bit better than 50-50. But knock on wood, knock on all the wood, it does seem like they've survived the worst of the pitching injuries thus far. You know, Kirby is back. You are skeptical of that?
I would never, your knock on wood wasn't loud enough.
Okay.
Like,
okay.
You can't say you've survived a thing that we don't know. Like, it is literally a known unknown.
But you
unknown.
Had a stretch where
pitching injuries are a known unknown.
You had a stretch where at least 2 starters were out of the rotation for a month and a half. I guess 2 months, because it was almost exactly 2 months that Logan Gilbert missed. April 25th was his first previous start before Monday. And, you know, the fact that they weathered that as well as they did and got the pitching they did from Emerson Hancock and Logan Evans is, like, very encouraging, I would say. Like, if the offense, as much as everyone is just so constantly, there's just, like, a constant level of angst among Mariners fans about the offense, if the offense plays at the level that they have played over these first 2.5 months, the entire season, the Mariners will make the playoffs. Like, there's no question about it.
They also have the player who is second in MVP odds right now. Like,
That's
you can
true.
only have so much angst about the offense when the Mariners have.
The limit does not exist.
He right now is the best Mariners hitter. I'm sure those are the highest. Maybe Julio got up there, but I don't think so. I can't imagine a time when he was that high in MVP odds into well into June. And it would have been anybody else
Yeah.
since Ichiro. Like, Cal Raleigh is Raleigh. Cal Raleigh is the best Mariners hitter. To some people, Ichiro. To other people, better players who came before. Edgar Martinez.
When was the last time the Mariners, just what the last time the Mariners had somebody like get significant votes? Julio, did
He finished in like
finish,
the top five, right?
I believe so. Apparently Robinson Cano finished 5th in 2014. I was wondering if there was ever a Nelson Cruz season.
There's a big difference between being second. Obviously, it's second in June, but like
No,
getting some
I
votes at the end of
agree.
the year.
I mean,
And
there might have been a start where Nelson Cruz could have been way up there, I suppose, potentially. But yeah, I mean, again, yeah, the like if the hitting continues where it is, the starting pitching will probably, generally speaking, be a bit better than it has been thus far. And he finished sixth in, well, 2020 was already gone. He finished sixth in
how
2015.
it's going to be more than a bit better, though, because they've been through this is the first point of the season when they've had both Kirby and Gilbert on the rotation.
I mean, that's what I just said that you felt was not knocking on wood hard enough.
I
And
understand, but I wouldn't be so bold as to say that there's not going to be future pitching injuries, but.
I don't think that's what I was saying. But the other element is, assuming that they remain reasonably in contention while everyone is focused on them adding a bat before the deadline, which they should do, they also, it should be pretty easy to upgrade the bullpen at the deadline. If they don't just get better and healthier there over time with Matt Brash being healthy, et cetera.
That was the
So.
other thing. I meant to incorporate this into my hot take, but Jerry Depoto, with his all of Italian skin shining in the sun, has been talking a lot about finding a bat, right? About making a big move at the deadline and that they're willing to do it. And I think at this point, he's talked enough about it that they're having semi-serious conversations.
I would agree with that.
So we'll see. But Jerry Depoto saying that they're having trade conversations at the top of the market and that they're always there was it raised a little bit of like, are you sure? But then I was thinking and I was like, Castillo was probably near the top of the market. Rosarina was near the top of the market,
Yeah.
you know, and like they made those moves the last two of the last four seasons. So I kind of can't say that Jerry's wrong about it. It's almost like Jerry DePoto has a branding problem more than almost anything else.
I mean, I don't think that's helping. I'll put it that way. So.
But there are I think people treat these things because MLB fan bases are so insular vis-a-vis national baseball fan bases. You know, it's basically a bunch of small fan bases, right? Like seeing the Red Sox and the move that the Red Sox made with Devers was something where it's like that was more extreme than anything the Mariners have done.
Yeah. And it still wasn't even the most extreme trade the Red Sox have made
And they're the
involving a star
fucking
player.
Red Sox. You know what I mean? Where it's just like the Mariners could get away with this bullshit, but they're the Red Sox. Like they're the, you know, they're one of the top five teams that are not supposed to be doing that. So
I mean,
I
I think that insular thing, it does. The thing that annoys me particularly is when people act like the Mariners exist in a vacuum and other teams don't exist. And it's like, well, the Minnesota Twins had to cut payroll a couple of years ago for very similar reasons. And you know the salary dump that they made? They traded Jorge Polanco to the Mariners. It's just no one complained about it because Jorge Polanco had a bad season in
Yeah, but
2024.
they were wrong. Just wait.
They didn't know the hot takes.
Just wait.
Time, biggest hater, etc.
If you wait long enough, Jorge Polanco becomes a really good baseball player. That's what Time is the Greatest Hater is all about.
Anything else on the eventual AL West leader, Seattle Mariners?
The Gilbert start had me really excited about it. It was almost like, and then Wu coming out today and just being lights out, right? I think it was.
It's one hit over seven innings. Yeah.
And 86 pitches. You know what I mean? Like just doing it casually.
Maybe the Gilbert start didn't register the same way for me because I only tuned into that game after the NBA Finals game concluded, after Gilbert had left, and I saw the Mariners not score runs.
No, I saw none of it either. This is not even like watching it. It was basically just like.
But I'm saying the frustration with the offense in that game, even though it shouldn't be overstated, was more palpable.
Sure, I believe that that is the case. If you, in your first game back from injury, pitch five innings and strike out 10 batters, that is dominant stuff.
If I, in my first game at any point, strike out 10 batters.
So it feels right now, again, I mean, we can knock on wood all we want about everything. It's fucking baseball. People get hurt. But like, it seems right now like Logan Gilbert is going to hit the ground running. There might not be as long of a window. He had the spring training that George Kirby didn't have. And all of these starters, you know, like there's.
And they were able to be very cautious with his rehab period. I mean, he made, I think, four starts at AAA. You know, you contrast that to Bryce Miller, who didn't get a rehab assignment. I mean, obviously, he was not out as long, but didn't get a rehab assignment at all. Very different.
Yeah, the Kirby performance wasn't amazing over the weekend in the game that they beat the Guardians in, who is probably still kind of getting back despite the previous one. But then you look at these, you know, since dating back to the Diamondback series, the pitching's been pretty freaking good. And that's a whole time through the rotation against pretty good offenses. I mean, we don't know what the Red Sox are going to be going forward, but I think it would be a nice win to win the series against the Red Sox and then pick up a couple of series wins in a row to get back on track for where the Mariners were at beforehand.
Agreed. All right, let's get back to where we were beforehand. The roundup, starting with your beloved Sounders, who opened the FIFA Club World Cup on Sunday, hosting.
Are you aware? Sorry, you were talking at that, and I felt like I needed to talk about the
of
Red
course.
Lion. No. Every single.
Multiple people had to check whether their podcast player had accidentally skipped ahead because it was such a jarring abrupt transition with no warning.
Beautiful non sequitur.
And you want Saul to know you have a podcast?
I know, I don't. Saul told me I should have the podcast. Every single game against the Cubs starts at the precise same time.
Okay.
All 11:20 a.m. Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Boom, boom, boom. 11:20 a.m. Pacific time. It's very strange.
I mean, it is unusual to be that consistent, but, you know, most teams, if you played a Friday and Saturday, those games would be at night. I don't know if you're aware of this. The Cubs famously play during the day. I've been there. Been to a day game on a Friday afternoon. It was great.
They still do that?
Yeah.
I thought they played at nighttime now.
I mean, they occasionally play night games, but it is not common practice, no.
I, for one, don't track the National League.
You want to talk about an insular baseball fan there. All right, Seattle Sounders.
Not a fan of seeing the pitchers hit.
Well, I've got some news for you about the National League, sir. Got some news for you. Wait till you find out that they expanded the roster to 26 players. Seattle Sounders opened the FIFA Club World Cup on Sunday, hosting Brazilian side Botafogo. They had a lot of pair of first half goals before pulling one back with Christian Roldan heading home a Paul Rothrock cross in the 75th minute. Sounders continued to have the better of the play in the second half, but couldn't find the equalizer, putting just four of their 23 shots on target. This was obviously the Sounders' most realistic chance to win a game in the FIFA Club World Cup. But, you know, I still think an encouraging performance, all things considered, that the Sounders more than held their own with the team that won the Copa Libertadores last year, as well as the Brazilian Serie A. You know, I think they more than acquitted themselves well. But The challenge gets much tougher this week as they face two of the world's top clubs, both from Europe, who played each other on Sunday, earlier Sunday, at the Rose Bowl, where in front of 80,000 fans, European champs PSG beat Atletico Madrid 4-0, putting 10 shots on goal and picking up where they left off with their 5-0 win over Inter in the UEFA Champions League final to complete their domestic to complete their season-long treble in 2024-25. Two of those goals did come after Atletico Madrid was reduced to 10 men, but PSG manager Luis Enrique started 10 of the 11 from the Champions League final a little over 2 weeks earlier, missing only injured forward Ousmane Dembélé, who is dealing with a calf injury. Atletico did not seem to take the match quite as seriously, with manager Diego Simeone bringing second leading scorer Alexander Sørloth off the bench. He did have an opportunity to get the game back to within 2-1 with a sitter that he couldn't convert before PSG made the final one-sided. Atletico was led by 29 goals across all competitions from Argentine Julian Alvarez, while veteran Antoine Griezmann had 16 goals and 9 assists. The Atletico Madrid match Thursday afternoon at 3 p.m., and then the PSG match Monday afternoon in tribute to your beloved Cubs, a 12 noon first kick at Lumen Field against the European champions. All right, Seattle Reign FC drew 2-2 Saturday at Chicago Stars. They went down 2-0 on a pair of goals from Ludmila, only to rally very late. They were still scoreless nearing the end of the 90, but got a goal from Lynn Biondolo in the 87th minute and one from Jordan Bug 2 minutes later to share the points. Per Optive Jack, the Reign were the first road team in NWSL history to trail by multiple goals in the 85th minute or later and still get a result. They'll wrap up the first part of their NWSL schedule Saturday at the last place Utah Royals, who have just one win and two draws from 12 matches thus far and have a -15 goal differential, albeit one goal better in terms of goal differential than Chicago at -16. Afterwards, the NWSL will break until August for summer international competitions. All right, Seattle Storm.
Is this it? We have nothing after this?
Yeah, that's it.
Wow. It is really mid-June, I guess.
It is very much time for us to start searching for cookies again.
Yeah. We desperately need cookies. I'm just
We
looking at all these sections and being like,
not
nobody
bad.
wanted to transfer? Anybody? In? Out?
People aren't doing a lot of transferring typically during graduation week. So the Seattle Storm will not be playing for the Commissioner's Cup title from the Western Conference. Alas, they had a golden opportunity after pulling the upset of the Minnesota Lynx last Wednesday after we last recorded. They're easily their most impressive performance of the season to knock off the previously undefeated 9-0 Lynx, who were the reigning Commissioner's Cup champions, as well as the team that took the New York Liberty the distance into overtime in game five in the WNBA finals last year and look every bit that good, if not better, thus far this season. So the Storm beating the Lynx by virtue of the head-to-head tiebreaker meant that if they won out, because it couldn't be a three-team tie at that point, that the Storm would in fact represent the West for the second time in the 5 years of the WNBA Commissioners' Cup's history. And everything was setting up very nicely for them, taking on the Golden State Valkyries and LA Sparks in the last two games. The Valkyries, as we talked about last week, off to a strong start, but missing several of their players due to the Eurobasket competition that is starting on Wednesday. Today now, as the clock just ticked over to midnight. Storm were heavy favorites in that one on the road, but a really tough start to this one. Struggled on the glass, rallied in the second half, but could not get over the hump. And that meant Minnesota then controlled its outcome in the Commissioner's Cup, needed only to win Tuesday night on the final night of games, facing the Aces, who were without A'ja Wilson for a third consecutive game due to a concussion, to lock that up. And despite losing their own MVP favorite front runner in Nafisa Collier in the second half of that one, Minnesota down 9 at the break still dominated the Aces in the second half, won comfortably. So the Commissioner's Cup was off the table by the time the Storm started on Tuesday night in LA against the Sparks team that was playing without several players, particularly at guard. Kelsey Plum, sat this one out with a lower leg injury that had just popped up when she was listed as out on the injury report the day before. But not terribly encouraging update from New Sparks coach and SPU grad Lynn Roberts before the game, as she said they don't know, you know, how long Kelsey Plum is going to be out for with this lower leg injury. But they're also missing their starting point guard Odyssey Sims is not with the team right now due to personal reasons. Their backup point guard Julie Alamond is also playing in Eurobasket. So this left them at point guard with two players signed to hardship contracts. Shea Petty got the start, and Grace Berger, who was signed to a hardship contract earlier in the day, was her backup. And the Storm very much took advantage of this Tuesday in their largest margin of victory of the season, blowing out the... It was... You know, they had a lead in the first half, a comfortable lead, but then really blew this one open in the third quarter en route to a 98-67 win over the Sparks. Doubly important, as we've been following for a long period of time, because the Storm also hold the Sparks' 2026 first-round pick, and they dropped to 4-9 with this loss. Big story on the Storm side, Gabby Williams, 8 steals, a franchise record, too shy of the WNBA record. Also had 11 points, 7 assists in this one. So threatened a triple-double, played 29 minutes. You know, obviously didn't play most of the fourth quarter with the game well in hand. Storm plus 34 with her on the court, plus 35 with Skylar Diggins. Neko Gumake against her former team, 26 points on 12 of 16 shooting, added 3 steals. Alicia Clark, 14 points on 4 of 5 three-point shooting off the bench. She's had 2 strong back-to-back games. Love to see her shooting so well in a reserve role with the starting lineup continuing to thrive with Erica Wheeler in there. So Storm now up to 7-5 on the season, heading into a really interesting stretch here. Friday, they complete this 3-game road trip at Las Vegas. We'll see whether Asia Wilson is back in the lineup by then. The Aces, you know, it felt like they had really rebounded when they came into Seattle and won the second of the 2 games that they had at Climate Pledge within 8 days. Then they got blown out by the Golden State Valkyries on national TV. They lost at home to LA in the game that Asia Wilson left with the head contact that led to the concussion. They did win their first game without her against Dallas, but now have lost 2 in a row and have dropped to 5-6 on the season. I mean, obviously the Aces are going to make the playoffs, but suddenly the first round pick that the Storm has from the Aces, thanks to the Jewel Lloyd trade,
interesting,
kind of interesting as well. Like right now,
it's not gonna be that good of a pick.
Not gonna be that good of a pick, but 2 of the bottom 6 records in the league. It's not gonna be that good of a pick, but you know, at the beginning you were penciling in, okay, it's a 15 team league, you know, they're probably gonna finish top 3. This is probably like the 13th pick at best. Now I think it's reasonable that it could be better than the Storm's own pick. It's not inconceivable. So that comes up on Friday. Sunday, the Storm host Brianna Stewart and the New York Liberty for the first time since they won last year's championship, the first in franchise history. And then Tuesday, Caitlin Clark makes her first visit of the season to Seattle. The Fever, who are 6-5 overall, but 4-2 with Caitlin Clark in the lineup outside of the quadriceps injury that she had, handed New York their first loss of the season on Saturday afternoon, meaning there are no longer any undefeated teams in the WNBA.
It is a pretty fun stretch, and I watched most of the fourth quarter of that Lynx game. I didn't watch earlier today against the Sparks, which sounded like I was fine to not watch, but the Storm team is, it was a great victory, and it seems like, you know, they're able to play with anybody. I was pretty impressed watching them during that game, and you know, some of the like shot making that they had and the finishing, it's like honestly pretty freaking solid here. And this team looks better than I was expecting overall.
Yeah, I mean, I think what's interesting compared to last year, specifically when the expectations were so much higher, is that the Storm really struggled to beat good teams. You know, they had a win over Minnesota. They beat Vegas early in the season, but both of those came when, you know, those teams were missing some players, were somewhat shorthanded. But they really took care of business against the lesser teams in the league. And this year's Storm, I would say, have a somewhat lower floor, as we saw against Golden State, but perhaps a higher ceiling with that win over Minnesota. One other thing that's been recontextualized, like previously there was a lot of lamenting their Storm's early losses to Phoenix and Atlanta, in I think the first five or six games of the season. And Phoenix is 8-4. They've been terrific despite having Alyssa Thomas. I mean, two of those losses came, four losses came against the Storm. One of those with Alyssa Thomas out of the lineup. And Atlanta is also 8-4. Gave New York a bit of a scare on Tuesday night. So, now the downside of that is you lost to a couple of teams that you're potentially now competing with for a top four seed, but the upside is those no longer look as bad losses as they did at the time. So the other bit of Storm news over the past week is that they on Saturday fulfilled Lee Yiu's trade request by sending her to Dallas for a 2026 second round pick and a 2027 third round pick. Notably, the Wings have the option to swap their second round pick that the Storm inherit with the Connecticut Sun. So with those two teams at the bottom of the WNBA standings, a very good chance that that will be the number 16 overall pick, the top pick of the second round that the Storm end up getting for Lee Yiu, who had kind of firmly fallen out of the rotation with Dominique Malunga continuing to solidify herself as the Storm's backup center.
Pretty solid deal. I mean, they're going to have so much draft capital next year.
Yeah, I mean, to this point where they're probably going to have to trade some of these picks. It is a really good year, though, I think, to be loaded up in the draft because, one of the situations you're going to have, the Storm last year were the only team that didn't lose a player in the expansion draft. With two teams picking this year, it is going to be inevitable that you're going to lose someone, and you don't have to protect draft picks in the way that if Lee Yiu had still been on the roster, she would have been someone you would have needed to protect.
Who
Now,
is coming to the league? What are the two teams?
the Toronto Tempo and the as yet unnamed Portland team.
Oh, hello.
Yeah. The I-5 rivalry is back.
Why did I not know that?
That's a great question. That's a you question. I wrote the news story about it on ESPN. So
Not behind a paywall, apparently.
it was not. It was not. Now the full circle thing here. The Golden State Valkyries, the player they presumably passed on when they did not take a Storm player in the expansion draft, was 2024 Storm third round pick Mackenzie Holmes, who did not join the team for training camp last year because she underwent knee surgery instead. But always the plan was all along for her to join the team this year. Valkyries presumably could have drafted her past instead. Mackenzie Holmes was one of the last cuts in training camp, but impressed enough that with that open roster spot with Lee Yiu being traded, the Storm signed her on Monday to fill that roster spot, and she made her WNBA debut on Tuesday night against the Sparks. So that was fun to see. She got to play against her former Indiana teammate Grace Berger, who, as we mentioned, is on a hardship contract with LA. Did not score, so still waiting for that first career basket for Mackenzie Holmes, but nice to get her some run there. So
All right. Well, that's all the teams.
I don't know. You're backing on the Seahawks. Do you have anything to say about them?
No, absolutely not. What would I have to say about the Seahawks in fucking mid-June?
Oh, people find a way. Life finds a way.
I am not interested. I was just back in enough to go to training camp. I am more in on just needing college football, the EA Sports college football to be out. And there's an update today that it seems like the transfer portal is going to be a little bit more active. That was a complaint that I had in the last game. But in the college football playoff is not going to be customizable, which I'm also annoyed about. I want a fully customizable. I want everything to be customizable, of course. I saw somebody posting about out of the park baseball, and I was like, maybe I should. I was like, if I ever want to kill like 500 hours.
I don't know if my old I don't believe my old 30 team user managed multi-season OTP sim is still going, alas.
I always there are people who like I always just want to be in darkness doing these things, right? Because you did it with other people.
That was the idea, yes.
I'm just like not interested in doing any of that. I always just want to be here, just like tweaking things, doing stuff myself.
Just customizing,
Yeah.
constantly tweaking the playoff.
Yeah. Yeah, the playoff. I mean, they have like an online dynasty in college football, and I'm just like, I'm good. I'm okay on that. Just want to be here on my own. It's an important reminder every once in a while that things should be fun and that you don't need to judge like outside factors. of how you think you should do something. Like human beings hold themselves to kind of strange standards where it's like you can't enjoy something unless you're doing it from perspective of like a made up person judging you that doesn't exist. And it's like, no, this is a piece of entertainment for me, so I could do it however I want.
I'm not quite sure I follow your argument.
You don't have like standards. Sometimes you'll be like, if I don't do this thing at this level or whatever, like if you play a video game at like a low level, just enjoy it, you know? But then you like get mad at yourself and you're like, why am I doing this at this low level to enjoy it? It's like, oh, actually, this is entertainment.
Okay.
The thing that I'm doing is a piece of entertainment. No one is judging me.
I suppose not. Dude. Only when you appear on panels are people judging you.
Positively, positively.
On that note, maybe we should actually get to the after the pod talk that we've been teasing for so long.
Oh, it's so good. On that note.
Thanks for listening.
What a short podcast. Are we supposed to do more after the pod talk? The
Oh
real
no.
after the
You can't do after the pod talk after the
pod?
pod.
It was so short. I feel like I have nothing else to say. I like kind of want to talk about the NBA finals, but also don't want to talk about the NBA finals, and I have no silver lining except for the fact that it's kind of just like I don't actually care that much. If the Thunder win, they win. Whatever. Right? What did you predict? Thunder in seven?
No, I predicted Thunder in five. I'm
Oh.
already wrong on the length of the series.
Okay.
I did before the season pick the Thunder to win it all. So,
How many people did that? A lot.
at ESPN,
Yeah.
only me.
Only you? Whoa! How many people were picking that?
I think it was like a dozen. I don't know. I mean, it's not like, Stephen A. Smith isn't on there. It's only the writers who posted it. Also, I picked the Suns to make the conference finals in the 76ers.
Nobody remembers that. All that they remember is the champion.
I don't think anyone remembers that either, but
Until
let me tell you,
you remind them.
I wasn't alone in picking the Suns. A lot of people did.
Really?
Oh yeah.
You thought the Suns would be good?
At the Because in preseason they were like had this great shot chart and it was like Mike Budenholzer is going to come in and fix what ails them, and I think I was correct to not believe in a lot of the other teams in the West. So
Except for the Thunder.
yeah, I mean it was Thunder and then it was like everybody else clearly.
I don't know. The Durant thing feels weird to me too. It's just like he'll be on some other team. It's like
He always is.
it's such a strange career.
Yep. But he would still be in Seattle if the team hadn't moved.
Did you listen to the entire podcast?
No, I haven't listened to the whole podcast.
I feel like I kind of agree with Simmons, but also I was like,
I
also
mean,
maybe not.
I think some of his career would play out. There's not that many players that stay with one team their entire career. And I do think Kevin Durant is searching for something that has led to some of these changing teams. And I don't know that the team being in Seattle would have changed that.
Simmons was like making up a lot of things where he's like, they would have spent more in the situation. They wouldn't have done this. They wouldn't have, I'm like, maybe.
Right. I
I
mean,
don't
it's
know.
and the butterfly flapped its wings and
It was more like the him saying that was like the version of the KJR when the Mariners win the World Series in the
right.
strike shortened season. It's
I
just
mean,
like it
the
didn't
thing is,
happen, so we can imagine the best thing happened.
exactly. You can't, it's impossible to disprove.
When in the hypothetical world where Kevin Durant stays in Seattle, then when the Sonics stay in Seattle, then Kevin Durant plays his entire career in Seattle. I'm just like, okay. I
It's
mean,
unfalsifiable.
yeah, it's like, sure. I guess if that would make me happy, then great. It doesn't because I don't care, but I only care about transactions anyway. So I guess maybe Kevin Durant's the greatest player in NBA history.
Wow, if you really think about it. LeBron is probably number one for my career, but Kevin Durant's way up there too.
Now, LeBron's done some pretty good transact too.
Yeah, but he'd never gotten traded. So I've never graded a LeBron transaction. I mean, I guess technically he did get traded to Miami, but A, I was not working for ESPN at the time, and
Was
B, it
that
was
long ago you weren't working for ESPN?
no.
Really?
Yeah, I got hired at ESPN a year and a half after LeBron joined the Heat.
Wow.
Oh no,
He's
2.5 years. It was
old.
yeah, fun fact.
I mean, you've been working at ESPN for a long time.
That's true.
It's kind of hard to. I would have guessed that you started working there. Like, if you would have asked me where in. Okay, here's how old LeBron James is that I see TikTok videos where they're like, who's the person who, like, LeBron assisted the most in his career? Do you know the answer?
Anthony Davis?
No. I mean, me telling you about how old it is probably should give it this away,
Oh,
but.
I see. It's the opposite. It's Zydrunas
It's Big Z,
Ilgauskas?
and the people on the TikTok are like, it's somebody named Zydronis Sulgauskas, and
Oh, no. Oh, no.
I'm like,
The
first off, if
disrespect.
you're gonna make a TikTok about basketball, it wasn't that long ago. Like, you should probably have some sense of what was going on in basketball in the early 2000s. Me paying attention to music has to know music like 1960 onward, but these motherfuckers can't figure out basketball the year 2000 and beforehand. It's like basketball started at KD, maybe something like that. Although Big Z even crossed over with KD.
We certainly did.
I don't even know who the player who like player X would be for children. Steph Curry, maybe.
Yeah, that seems reasonable.
I feel like he's like the beginning of time for like children's. But like, I'm like, my kids probably know he's in fucking like 2K. You know, like NBA history is more knowable than like most sports, it feels like. Anyway, but if you would have asked me what year where LeBron was in his career when you started ESPN, I'd be like, probably like, I guess I do remember that you were working for the Pacers when he was playing them in the conference finals and stuff.
No, by the time they played in the conference finals, I had already started ESPN, but they did play in the second round in 2012 when I was
How is that true?
consulting
No,
for the
that doesn't make
Pacers.
sense. You said you were.
LeBron signed with the Heat in 2010.
You're talking about the Heat playing the Pacers. I was saying the Cavs. The Cavs never played the Pacers in.
No, the Pacers did
Okay.
not make the playoffs when the. Or, I mean, maybe they did not make the playoffs when LeBron was in Cleveland and I
So
was working for
he
them.
was mostly showing down with like the Celtics then?
Yeah.
Okay.
And Orlando,
Man, the Magic,
2009
yes.
Conference Finals.
Okay. But yeah, I would have guessed that it was like a couple years left in Cleveland the first time.
You would have guessed wrong.
Was when you were hired there.
There you go.
Okay, so I did this panel last night.
I saw this with Saul, friend of the pod, Saul.
Is he a friend of the pod?
Yeah,
Did
why
you
isn't
just
he a friend
determine
of the
that?
pod?
I mean,
No, I saw him in the photo with you and I was like,
let
you
me
know what?
explain to you why he is not a friend of the pod, because that's kind of what my
Oh
story is. No, it's not a negative thing
no.
about Saul.
Oh no. But it's a negative thing about the pod.
No. So it's like me, Saul, rapper from Seattle, like an R&B artist from Seattle, Macklemore's manager. I am crushing on this panel, right? Which like there's a reality that the
What
pe
define crushing?
oh, after people were like one-liners, insane. There and the R&B artist was like, I love that you just like kept it real on all these things. It was like every question, like somebody would ask a question, then there'd be a long, awkward silence, and I was like, guess I'm answering this one too. So anyway,
The opposite of the podcast. Well, I guess
it
the
was
awkward
like
silences are not the opposite. It's just usually that I'm the one who fills them on the podcast.
the podcast, but no sounder section. There was no rundown.
It was all hot takes.
And
It's all hot takes.
so like I really like I was just so in my element. And this is like I think Macklemore's manager is great, but he works with Macklemore. And just Macklemore right now, and so it's like the amount of like talking to young artists or whatever. Like I just that's the shit that I do all the time, you know. Like I'm doing that so much more often than the stuff that he's dealing with in Macklemore world is a totally different world. Anyway, it happens. Everybody after they were like that was hilarious because I was number one, first and foremost, looking for jokes and then information. Two or three. I don't know what two was, but information got dropped down between question mark. Anyway, no, I was like, also, I'm like, I know
vibes
so well, and I have answers for all of these things. But so Saul, after, this is why Saul is not friend of the podcast. He was like, that was awesome. He was like, you should have a podcast.
Oh, and I like, no!
Looked at my friend and I was like, and I thought he was joking because he knew. And he was like, no, I'm being serious. Like, I really think you should have a podcast.
I mean, granted, he probably was not asking for you to be have a podcast about Seattle sports and occasional for food searches.
Is that incredible? After he was like, damn, you should have a podcast. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. I'll think about that. At no point was I like, actually, I do.
The real joke here is that Saul thought that any white man in America in 2025 does not already have a podcast.
It'd have been like me and C-Cord have one together, actually.
I guess maybe the problem is because of the fact that you no longer have a beard and only a mustache, you're not making it as clear when you walk around the streets that you have a podcast as I do every single day.
That is true. You walk around with your podcast right there on your face. The other best part was, so we're talking about like there's a lot of like about Macklemore's career and stuff like that. And then I like walk out and I'm walking to my car at Carey Hall and I look down the street. And who should be scootering along?
What?
It's like Macklemore is like the most Macklemore in every situation that he's in. You know what I mean? Like he could not look any less like Macklemore than he looks when he's scooting along and his three kids are on their bikes coming by. It was an incredible thing. It was like the most Seattle moment that happened after that. I was just like, oh my God. Is that...
Did you determine that Macklemore is Seattle's most Seattle person?
I honestly... No, he's not Seattle's most Seattle person because his image is not very Seattle. But like,
I mean, we could do an entire podcast series about Macklemore's image, particularly within the past year. But is it not Seattle?
Oh, no. I mean, Macklemore's actually way more real progressive than the people of Seattle, I will say. I think there's a lot less faux progressivism. So I don't know, maybe like... I don't like people judging celebrities or any person from the outside and ascribing. This is what I complained to you before, I think, about something else. Ascribing like humanistic qualities to a person that you don't know that well, but his public image is
humanistic. Is in
you can describe like physical like things that you could see and like output you could describe, but like judging character based upon public things is a very complicated thing to do. Like I was telling you about Bill Simmons and Cooper Flagg, how much he wants to win. And I'm like, how could you possibly judge how much Cooper Flagg wants to win vis-a-vis any other basketball player?
He is sweating a lot.
Oh yeah, that's a good key point. Or is he just white? Does he want to win a lot or is he white?
I would say the letter to Kendrick Lamar. It was Kendrick, right?
That was the most Seattle thing.
That's a pretty Seattle move.
winning a Grammy as a white rapper is, I guess, also a very Seattle move. Sorry.
You made it sound like there have been others who have done it. Did I miss a Travis Thompson Grammy? Which would be amazing.
Anyway, okay, fine. We found Seattle's most Seattle person.
No, I was gonna say, and. No, this maybe gets to some questions about third Pelton brother / fifth Talking Taco Time co-host Jake One. Macklemore's love for golf is not that Seattle a thing.
I actually think he's not Seattle's most Seattle person. But
I mean,
I don't know. I don't know what that means, though. Maybe like we're looking at stereotypes. That's what I think about when people talk about Seattle.
Jamal Crawford has always had a strong case for Seattle's most Seattle person.
Okay, fine. The reality is it's probably not a celebrity. It's like on The Good Place where it's just like just a guy who figured it out. His eye one day. Do you remember his name?
Doug Forsett.
Doug Forsett. I wonder who he's named after. Justin Forsett had to be the last name. But I do feel like sometimes Seattle qualities, like people are actually looking at like 1994 or whatever. We're talking about 30 years ago in Seattle.
I'm talking about a variety of things. And the thing about Macklemore is somehow he
He spans the ball.
yes, exactly.
He does have a song about the Mariners, which, according to the Discord, the quantity of posts, that is where he would be. That is Seattle's most Seattle Discord channel. I also wanted to ask you, though, at the very, very end here, you said trade grades are now public?
All of my writing. There is no more ESPN Plus.
Wow.
It's
ESPN,
all
it
in front
is
of the paywall.
ESPN senior writer, publicly available, Kevin Pelton. I had no idea, literally until this very, well, I actually knew earlier because you told me earlier, but
Yes, you knew hours
until
ago.
today, I had no idea. So trade grades are public, but for those of us who didn't know that information and read them, I looked at this trade and it was like a blockbuster trade. And I guess I haven't updated my heuristic about Desmond Bain because I was like
Well,
a
the
role
blockbuster part of
player.
it is that they traded so much for him, not that Desmond Bane is a star player.
Okay, so I was right in thinking that Desmond Bane wasn't worth this much capital or whatever. Who did you give a B plus to?
Neither side got a B plus. I know. The Discord predicted incorrectly on this wrong one. Memphis got a straight B. Orlando got a C plus. I do think that Desmond Bane is an incredibly good fit for the Magic. I understand why they made this move, but I think the salary structure that they're going to have now, where Jalen Suggs is on a descending contract, but Bane, Paolo is going to be on a max in a year. Franz Wagner is starting a max. Like, that's going to be a lot of money to pay to those four guys. And I think it's going to be very difficult for them to maintain depth around them, particularly without, all of these draft picks that they're trading away, including a very good one. Because the key to this deal is that Orlando has swap rights with probably Phoenix can, Washington can swap with Phoenix first, but Washington is also bad. So even if that swap happens, probably that's still a good pick. And
It just
Orlando
can't be. It
swaps.
can't be a really good pick,
It
but it
can't be
could
the
be.
number one pick.
Yeah.
So.
It's like Deal or No Deal. Like they can be down. They could end up with like a top. I mean, it could be the number two pick, I suppose. But
Hypothetically, there was one year that Philadelphia and Sacramento swapped, and it was the year that Philly had the three, got the three, and then traded up from there to number one, and Sacramento had the five after the swap. So, like, that's in play.
yikes. Okay. Yeah, I saw that and I was like, Desmond Bane? I hardly knew ye.
On that note,
Thanks for listening.
thanks.